Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Go really electric with an EV or plug-in hybrid from the Kia e-range.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Jennifer, good afternoon. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello.
Jennifer Brown, how are you?
How are you?
You want to talk about your son, Lewis?
I do, yeah.
And what's the issue?
The issue is my son has been we've been waiting for hip surgery for the last 2 years. And we just keep getting the runaround, to be honest. My son has spina bifida.
Okay.
And he is suffering with a dislocated hip.
And how have those 2 years been, Jennifer?
It's been very, very hard on us, and especially for Lewis, you know.
Yeah.
Lewis has been, he's such a happy social boy, and he loves to play with his sisters, and we just want him to go to play school and go to school soon, and this has just held him back massively.
And have you been told, Jennifer, why he is delayed?
No, we haven't. It's just, well, we were just told that we would get a date at Christmas time in 2020 for January 2021, mm-hmm. and that he'd be first priority on their list, and he'd be done definitely January 2021. Unfortunately, I never received that date.
You never received? Well, it never happened. Is that your point?
Yes, my point is, I never received that date, then, you know, it just never came through.
I'll go. I know Adam, Lewis's father, is also on another line. I'll go and see. Can I get a better line for you, Jennifer? It's very indistinct. Adam Brown. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John.
Lewis is 4 years of age. He's been wheelchair bound all his life, and he's paralysed from where, Adam? If you don't mind me asking.
From the top of his knees down. He has good movement, very, very weak movement, but he has good movement from the top of his hips down to his knees.
And what
brings one of the issues?
And what were you told were the prospects of helping him surgically?
Surgically, well, at the moment he's being held back to play school. He's not able to go to school, which is a big thing for him because he sees his sister's going every day, so he gets upset about that. And it's stopping him from his mobility. Like, he got a bad pressure sore just on the other side of Christmas there. It took 7 months to heal, which, okay, he might have got it still being in the wheelchair, but it didn't help matters because he had to pull himself around on his bum, as both leg lengths are different because of the hip being dislocated.
And when you engage with services, Adam, what are you told?
But we're always told, it seems to be passing the buck next to this department, to that department, and then we get called in for meetings, and we go for the meetings. We get told one thing, and it'll definitely go ahead, and we get the surgery day before Christmas, and it just never seems to come through. It just seems to be, tell you what you want to smile, and then goodbye.
Mm-hmm. And is there an excellent spina bifida association. Is it an issue within and between people who are suffering with spina bifida? Is there a general such a long waiting list?
There's definitely a waiting list. There's a lot of children. But my son's not the only child that's going through this. I can guarantee you there's a lot more out there. It just seems to be a lack of communication and a lack of either the services or funding. We're not sure who it falls on. It's just we keep getting the push around, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'll go back to Jennifer. Say with us, Adam. Jennifer, what does Lewis understand as to what is happening to him? He's such a young boy.
Yeah, he's such a young boy, and he's aware that he's in a lot of discomfort, and he's in a lot of pain as well. He does tell me sometimes, "Mommy, what happened to me?" You know, which is very upsetting to hear.
And is he in a lot of pain?
He is. Yeah, he does be. Especially when he's on the floor and he's trying to get up on his knees instead of bum shuffle, and he'd collapse and he'd cry out. And then he'd say, "Mum, what happened to me?" And I'd have to put him up and try and, like, tell him it's okay, you know? Especially, the major struggle is at night time as well. He just, he doesn't sleep a full night. He's so uncomfortable. It's constant discomfort all the time for him.
And in terms of any home exercises, Jennifer, that might help?
Yeah, I can't, to be honest, I can't work on him at all. Like, I can't, I'm supposed to do, like, exercises on his legs, especially for his feet, to stop them turning in. And, of course, I can't do that because every time I touch his leg and I raise it up, his hip clicks and he cries.
He clicks, oh my God.
Yeah, and even to put him in a stander, like, he's supposed to be in a stander to help his bone development and his strength. And, of course, I can't even put him in that because he's not comfortable. He cries, tells me, Mummy, it's sore, you know?
And does he ever get a full night's sleep, Jennifer?
No, never.
Oh,
no.
God.
Never.
Adam was coming in on that as well.
Yeah, never a full night's sleep. Always wakes up 3 or 4 times during the night crying, and we have to turn him off his hip and try and get him comfortable again.
So you've been promised surgery, you say, for 2 years?
Yes.
And have you got a new date? You were promised a date for January 2021.
Yeah, and that we were promised October 2019.
So that came and passed and went. Have you been given a new date?
No.
No, nothing.
And no one can seem to give you a straight answer when you try and contact either.
And which hospital do you liaise with, Jennifer?
We're in Temple Street Hospital.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do Temple Street, what's the latest communication from them? Or the most recent communication?
Well, we've been in contact with risk management from Temple Street, and they've advised us on different avenues which we've followed. We always come up against a brick wall. Everybody seems to pass the buck from office to office, and they haven't got no record or anything like that. It just seems to be a constant runaround.
I'm just reading now that the top line from a statement from the Children's Hospital in Temple Street. We sincerely regret that children and their families are experiencing long waiting times for their appointments. Temple Street Hospital are in regular contact with the Lewis family regarding his treatment plan and are working to have his surgery undertaken. Are you aware of that?
No, we have been in contact with different departments. And with the surgery department, it just keeps giving you the runaround, you know? Promises one thing and then nothing comes of it.
And in the meantime, Lewis is in pain.
He's suffering. Yeah.
Yeah, Lewis is in total discomfort 24/7.
And he's falling behind. This day and age, he shouldn't be falling behind. He should be in school now with everybody else, you know?
Yeah. And I come back to that question about the Spina Bifida Association, Jennifer.
Yeah.
Have you been in touch with them?
Oh, I have. They've Enabled Ireland has been a massive support to me and our family. They're extremely supportive with Lewis. And like even Temple Street Hospital nurses, they've been amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, unfortunately, we just haven't had a date. And it's gone on too long. It's been 2 years now, and It's very frustrating, to be honest. It's very upsetting, you know.
Okay. Now we thought we'd try and help you highlight that in hope that something can be done because of the age of your baby, your 4-year-old boy, and the fact that he's been in pain for so long, as you described. Jennifer Brown and Adam Brown, thank you both for contacting us. Joe at rte.ie, 1850 715 815, and 51551 Marchand.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at rte.ie. Now, during the outbreak there, you heard the ad saying don't have visitors in your home. Paddy Gary. Paddy, you're in County Meath, is that correct?
That's correct, Joe.
And you believe we have visitors, but they're from outer space?
I have no clue, Joe, where they come from, but all I can say for certain is that being from another from other worlds, have visited this earth, and continue to do so.
Okay, now Paddy, you're playing handball off a haystack here with me because I've no belief whatsoever in this.
Well, I wouldn't blame you, Joe, because it's crazy. It's crazy bonkers, to say the least of it.
Well, you take us back to when you first believed you saw something. The year is 1959.
The year is 1959, and I was just turning 14. And as usual, on a summer's evening, I was out with my brother and one friend, as it happened, out on the field out in front of our house. And we were bouncing the ball around the field with the hurleys. And when we decided to go in, I think it was my brother hit the ball down the field. It was a new ball that I was after getting.
Okay.
And I had to follow the ball down the field. Now, coming out across, out of the field, across a wall that dropped down onto the road, about 4 foot down onto the road, I turned around and looked over towards a low hill. And there was a disc, a blood red disc, a glowing blood red disc, about 100 feet in altitude over the hill. And I say it was, it had to be about 60 foot in diameter from memory. And I can still see it now, exactly. It's imprinted on my mind exactly if it only happened 5 minutes ago.
And what did it? What did you think that was?
At the time, I hadn't a clue what it was. I didn't know. Only it was something extraordinary.
Okay.
I shouted at my brother and my friend, "Hi lads, come back and have a look at this." But it had been a few minutes since they had left, and they had been they had gone into the house.
Okay, now, the reason you contact is you say that John Ratcliffe, who was the former intelligence director for Donald Trump, which must be an oxymoron, but he was a former intelligence director for Donald Trump. He is about to make a statement of information he was privy to when he was in charge of the intelligence portfolio in the United States government.
Yes.
Isn't that correct?
An article in... there, I think it was yesterday's Independent caught my eye, where the Pentagon was going to release a statement, I think in June, regarding unidentified flying object seen by their Air Force pilots.
Okay. And Ratcliffe, who's now obviously not in the job, but he said that the report will document previously unknown sightings from all over the world. Frankly, there are a lot more sightings than have been made public. Some of those have been declassified. And when we talk about sightings, we're talking about objects that have been seen by Navy or Air Force pilots or have been picked up by satellite imagery that frankly engage in actions that are difficult to explain, movements that are hard to replicate and that we don't have the technology for, and they are travelling at speeds that exceed the sound barrier without a sonic boom. This is a senior former American intelligence official.
Yes, well, the object I saw was stationary, and I said it was about 100 foot in altitude over this low hill, and I watched it for about 3 minutes. I say I watched it for three minutes until it glided down on a trajectory that took it behind a wooded area where I'm sure it landed. I didn't see it land, but I'm sure it did land.
And did you say it to your pals that night?
No, I kept it myself. I never told anyone.
But surely if you saw, you're 14 years of age, you're playing hurling in the field, you saw a massive red disc landing, gliding and then landing, surely you'd shout over to your pals.
You see, my pals had already gone into the house. I was alone.
Okay.
I was alone.
Okay, well then you didn't tell them, other sightings.
Pardon?
Have you had other episodes since?
Well, you see, strange strange incidents that have dogged me all through my life.
Okay.
And they're equally bizarre.
Okay.
I can tell you an incident that happened years later. I was in bed one night. So, well, of course I was in bed. Mm-hmm. And I was awakened during the night. And I don't know why, I don't know what woke me, but I just looked at a clock on the bedside locker, and it was exactly 2:30 in the morning.
Okay.
And there's a big window just opposite the bed,
right.
And there were dark curtains. We had no double glazing at the time. There was heavy dark curtains, a brownie colour. And I noticed a light on the curtains. Now, I thought to myself, is that a car out on the road with a light shining up the drive, and the reflection is on the curtains? And I was waiting for somebody to maybe come in or for the car to go away. I didn't know why the car was there, but I knew there was something outside. And the amazing thing that happened was that light started to grow in intensity, slowly in intensity, until it became, the curtains became a milky white glow. And here's where it becomes absolutely bonkers. That white glow turned into a white milky mist and started to come towards me in the bed. And at this stage, I realised that I should give my wife a nudge, who was beside me. And when I tried to do it, lift my arm, I was paralysed. I couldn't move my arm. And the next thing I know, I was out. I was gone. I remembered nothing until the next morning.
Okay, and have you discussed any of this with your friends, Paddy?
I kept it. I never discussed it with anyone.
Why?
Until some years later, about three years later, my son, who was home on a break from college, I was sitting at the table reading a newspaper, and himself and his sister and a friend were talking generally among themselves.
Okay.
And the conversation came up about the paranormal, as a matter of fact. And they were asking one another, "Do you see ever see anything strange that you didn't understand?" And when it comes round to my son, he came up with this. Well, I was asleep one night, and a bright light came into the room, and the next thing I knew, I was asleep. And that must have been the time when the same incident occurred in my bedroom. It has to be.
Yeah, but could that be sleep paralysis?
I don't know.
But are there other explanations?
I don't know. You see, I had other experiences before that.
Mm.
Now, I didn't know. It was only about 3 years later. I was reading an evening paper, the evening press, the old evening press.
Yeah.
And the front page headlines was all about UFOs. And it was only then, when I read that article, that I knew what I was after seeing about 3 or 4 years previously. I had no idea what I had seen until I read that article.
Yeah, but you said, Paddy, that you believed that UFO landed in County Meath in 1959.
Yes.
Okay. Do you believe anyone got out of it?
I don't know, Joe, because I was in the house after it went out behind the trees, and I never thought much more about it. Well, I did think a lot about it, but it actually occurred to me to go over there to have a look.
Mm-hmm.
But would you believe I was scared? For some reason, I was scared to do so.
Right. Do you believe there are aliens among us?
I do, yes. On two occasions, I've seen... how would I say it? I've seen humans, I've seen people on two occasions who I am certain were alien. And it goes back to this UFO phenomenon, where I read later that in most cases there was incidents of people seen or being visited by what it was called Men in Black.
Yeah, well, these are the movies.
Well, I tell you, Joe, it's for real. That's for real. People didn't make that up, because I've seen those on two occasions. Now I've haven't had contact with them, but
what did the Men in Black look like? Don't say Men in Black. And how would you know? How would you know these Men in Black are aliens?
Instinctively. If you looked at their features and you'd have a sixth sense, your instinct would tell you that they weren't human. You remember Kojak, Telly Savalas?
Yeah, Kojak, lollipop.
Well, if you can sort of visualise Telly Savalas' face, only longer or narrower, and a sort of a North African mahogany brown, with a blank stare, wearing a black hat and black clothes. And if you saw two of them together in a black American limousine driving in County Mead, and when I saw those two characters, I knew exactly what they were.
And what was their intent?
I don't know. When I met that car.
Okay.
Pardon?
I'm just wondering, is this the first time you've spoken publicly about this?
Yes.
But have you told your friends?
I did discuss it with one or two people.
And what was their reaction?
I don't know. I think they might have been ready to call the fellas with the white coats.
Not the men in white.
The men in white, yeah. To be honest with you, I wouldn't blame them. But
do you watch? You see, but Paddy, how come the men, the aliens you saw in County Meath in an American stretch limo,
yes,
how come they're like the Men in Black from the movies?
That's a good question, Joe. I have no idea. And I'll tell you something even stranger. That was back in the late 1990s.
Okay.
I was coming from Dublin, and on the road before I came into Trim in County Meath, I met that car on a sharp 90-degree turn. And the minute I saw, I noticed that car immediately, and I noticed two characters who were in the front. And even stranger, about 3 years ago, that was late 1990s.
Okay.
I have a piece of land down, nearly a 2-acre lane. And I was going down there one evening, and what I'm going to tell you now is unbelievable. I heard the noise of a plane coming across a field where there should be no plane.
Yeah.
And it came across the laneway, right over my head, a single engine plane.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a view of the character that was in the cockpit of that plane with goggles and an old leather helmet. And he was a twin brother of one of those characters I had seen in that limousine about 20 years previously. And that's how bonkers all this stuff is. It's unbelievable.
You can say that again. But Paddy,
But my story I got interested in that, and I started reading then.
Yeah, that's
other
what I mean.
People's experience.
Okay, so
experiences, and it's more than a coincidence that I had exactly the same experiences.
Yeah, and then
and then some.
Okay, but then, Paddy, there's a whole industry built around UFOs, isn't there? Movies, books, comics.
Of course there is. There's people making a pile of it.
Making a pile of money out of it, yeah.
They are. But how many of those people that's making that money, how many of those have actually seen a real UFO up close? Or seen what I have seen? Or other people like me have seen? I guarantee there's probably none of them. They're just cashing in on what other people are reporting.
And remember you said to me there a few minutes ago about, after you're talking about the men in black, that the men in white might be coming to get you.
Exactly.
But why do you say that?
Well, you're after listening to my story, Joe.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you have listeners there that are after listening to it. And how many people can get their head around what I'm after telling you?
Well, you know what people will say, Paddy.
I know exactly what they'll say.
What will they say?
To say that I should be carted off to a mental institution.
And what do you say to that?
Well, they can say what they like,
yeah.
But why is it then that the Pentagon are going to release a statement in June concerning objects that have been picked up on radar and seen by their Navy pilots and Air Force pilots, and they have no explanation for them?
Yeah, again, I come back to this man, John Ratcliffe, the intelligence director for a period there with Trump. Multiple sensors are picking up these things. They're unexplained phenomenon, and there are actually quite a few more than have been made public.
Yeah, but if you look at the technology now that the military in the United States and Britain, France, maybe Russia are developing, and they're developing stealth technology.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
That aeroplanes and ships, that it's hard for radars to detect.
That's true.
Because it's got to do with physics, and it's got to do with modern developments in computer technology that's making all this possible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wonder where all that is coming from. It sort of ties in a funny sort of a way in what I'm after describing to you and what I've seen. And another thing about that, people that are expecting to see beings, maybe they can interact with us. I wonder, people say they come from other planetary systems. I wonder, do they? I don't know why the thought crossed my mind that they might be coming from other dimensions in space-time. And we would be incapable, maybe, of having any sort of interaction with these beings, for the want of a better word of describing them.
I'm familiar with a series at the minute on Sky, I think it's on. It's called Resident Alien. Have you seen that one? It's quite funny, actually. It's very well done.
No, I don't watch that sort of stuff at all.
Okay, so you're not suggestible in that sense?
No. I tell you, I never took drugs in my life and I've never touched alcohol.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't.
I'm not after publicity, far from it.
Mm.
But I would love to know, is there anyone else out there in this country that has experiences similar to my own?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not talking about people who see strange lights in the night sky.
Okay.
I'm talking about people who have seen something strange, a craft on the ground or pretty close to the ground, that struck them as alien, for want of a better word.
Okay, well, 1857 15815, Joe at rt.ie. And 51551, wash your hands. Dr. Kevin Nolan is a lecturer in physics with Technical University in Dublin. Told us, Kevin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yeah, lovely to talk to you.
How are you?
Good.
Have you heard much of Paddy?
No, just picked up the end of it there, yeah. So
okay.
I just came in late on it, yeah. So Are you asking about the likelihood of UFOs? So, I mean, the thing is that the chances of an alien spacecraft visiting Earth are very low. Now, we do think there's life in the universe. There might be upwards of billions of Earth-like planets out there, but it's unbelievably hard to get here. And there are lots of other kind of natural phenomena we do see. In fact, there's so many satellites even in orbit now, and some of them crashing, that people may even be witnessing, you know, parts of artificial satellites coming to the ground, as well as unusual phenomena. So the notion that maybe somebody might be encountering a UFO as an alien spacecraft is, you know, I'm giving the scientist viewpoint, quite low. You can never say never, and no scientist would ever say never, but it is very low.
But you believe there is there's life out there in the universe.
Well, current estimates in the Milky Way galaxy alone, of which there are billions of galaxies, says there could be upwards of 40 billion Earth-like planets. Like, we estimate there's over 2 trillion planets in the Milky Way alone. And they are only recent discoveries, and we're not saying there's life on them. We've not found it. We've been searching for 50 years for microbes on Mars and haven't found them. But it would be almost a preposterous notion. As Carl Sagan said, if there's nobody else out there, it's an awful waste of space. So, but the thing is, even the nearest stars would take thousands of years using our rockets. So if they are visiting, they have to be much more technologically advanced. And one way that we think it's very hard to travel from one star, from one planet to the other, one star system to another.
And but Kevin, have we learned much from the recent landing on Mars?
Well, it's only just beginning a 2-year mission. What we have found is that Mars was really like the Earth in the beginning. It had oceans, freshwater lakes. It would have supported early life on Earth, from Earth there. Now, as you may know, Mars is a dusty place now. It's smaller than Earth. It faded away billions of years ago. So what Perseverance will do is look for evidence. Was there microbial life there in the past?
Okay.
And it has unbelievably sophisticated tools to find that, but it hasn't found it yet.
Okay. Paddy, would you see Kevin? This is the first time he's spoken publicly about his beliefs, and he's making strong arguments, and he's using this upcoming statement apparently by John Ratcliffe, who was the former director of intelligence for Trump, and he said when he had access to the information, sightings of unidentified objects are much greater than have been previously disclosed, and that's where Paddy is coming from. So Paddy, I don't know, after the Kevin, if you're willing to stay with us, please do. Paddy, would you like to ask Kevin some questions to ask Kevin after this break, and we'll have other callers as well, because on the one hand, Kevin is saying that the possibility of it would be preposterous to disregard the possibility of life in our infinite universe, but the possibility of other life getting to planet Earth and spending 2 weeks in quarantine in Clontarf, but the prospect of extraterrestrial life getting to planet Earth is preposterous as well. So on the one hand, it's on the one hand. On the other hand, Paddy, stay with us, and Dr. Kevin Nolan, 51551, wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Paddy Gary has contacted us. He lives in County Meath. You're a farmer. Is that right, Paddy?
I'm not. I don't want to say too much about my identity, Joe, to be quite honest with you.
Okay. And he's been reading about an upcoming release from the American government about unidentified flying objects, and John Ratcliffe, who was in charge of intelligence for a period there under Donald Trump, he said in advance he wanted to declassify a lot of the information, but he wasn't able to get it into an unclassified format that we were able to talk about quickly enough. He said the forthcoming report due out in June, July will admit there have been many more sightings of unidentified flying objects flying at ridiculous speeds, unexplained movements, in other words, doing things in the air which are physically impossible by machines invented by us. And he says there's a lot more of them. And that's Paddy then gave us his explanation, and Kevin Nolan is a lecturer in physics with the Technical University in Dublin. He's on the line as well. And Brian Hyde in Leash has contacted us. Brian, go ahead, please.
Hiya, Joe. I was in the Navy from 1984 to 1988.
Okay.
And I did my recruitment in 84, and then for the 6 months after the 6 months training, I was stationed on Spike Island.
Okay.
And I was on duty one night in the out in the guard room, and I don't know, maybe it could have been 12, 2 o'clock, something like that. I'm not really positive, so long ago now.
Okay.
But without doubt, I saw a UFO in the sky, without a shadow of a doubt in my mind.
You're deaf. And what did you see, Brian?
It was for all the world, it was like you'd see nearly in the films, but now obviously it was pitch dark, but there was lights, it was coloured lights in it. It was circular.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it moved, there was no sound. But the way it moved, it couldn't, it wasn't, I was used to seeing helicopters, I was used to seeing planes. This was definitely neither of those things.
And did you report it to your superiors, Brian?
No, I didn't. I wouldn't have liked, so I'd say, I'd have ended up the, you're I'd have ended in, on the car, I'd say.
No, but Brian, you're in a member of our defence forces, one of the arms of our defence forces.
Yeah,
you're specifically on guard duty.
Yeah,
in one of our most important naval installation in the Republic. Isn't that correct? That's where
Spike Island.
You're on guard duty there. You see a foreign object about to land.
Yeah,
and you're afraid to tell your superiors.
No,
for being invaded.
There was no fear of it landing. Well, it could have got that load of Spike Island anyway, that's for sure. the way it moved, it moved really slow.
Okay, a helicopter, a plane, a flare.
No, not a chance. It moved really slow. It came from the Cork City direction and it moved really slow over Cove. Then it moved, it kind of moved in odd ways. Then it came fairly overhead. No, I'd say it was way up. But then
did you tell any of your buddies?
Oh, I did. I told a lot of
your comrades. Sorry, your comrades.
Yeah.
What did they say?
some of them believed me. Some of them thought I was off me rocker, you know. But yeah, no, I without a shadow of a doubt, in my mind, it was a UFO, and there's nothing else could explain it. Like,
okay, have you seen anything since?
Never.
Okay.
I've seen some strange things, all right, but not UFO wise, like.
No. Okay, no, it's okay, Brian, stay there for a sec. Noel Barron, okay. Noel, where are you, Noel?
I'm Carlo.
Carlo, okay. What have you seen?
Back in 1982, I seen a spacecraft over the garden at home, and we'll say it's about 2 o'clock in the morning, and just was transfixed on it and very bright light, and then it just shot off into the west. With great speed and that, you know. And then maybe 1995, myself and a friend of mine travelling back from Kilkenny, and we actually stopped on the road, and there was a triangular craft over us, about 100 foot up over us.
And where was that? Where was that again, Noel?
That was coming from Kilkenny.
Kilkenny, okay.
And we stopped on the road and looked up, and I suppose it was about maybe 100 foot in the air, but there was no sound or anything, and it was just travelling slow off towards the west. But the next morning, I heard on the radio that there was some kind of an unidentified flying object, which was sighted around Shannon Airport. So that kind of confirmed it for me. So, and a friend of mine in Canada, he seen similar things around the same time. And what he did then, we got in contact with Brad Steiger, the author in America, and he put our stories in different books. And one was Communion, and I can't remember the others anyway. Okay.
And Noel,
I remember doing all that.
Noel, were you frightened when you saw them?
No.
No, that's, why would you not?
No, just amazed, really. Like, now, another friend of mine, well, she's since passed away, but herself and a friend seen around Carlow, Kilkenny area as well. Now, at a different time, sometime around maybe the 90s, 2000s, and the seen one coming up out of the woods. And it's actually, they said it followed their car and all that, and they didn't know how to, they were just flying down the road, turned around and came back home. They couldn't believe it. And they called the guards and everything. So it was gone at that stage. So.
And how did you come across this chap, Brad Steiger?
A friend of mine in Canada. Now, he was after seeing the same UFOs. And I'm a pen friend of his. And he said that he sent me on his address. So I contacted Brad Steiger. So he wrote to me and he wanted to know where to give over the stories for a book he was doing at the time. Now, I know one book was called Communion, and I can't remember the other books now, but he said I had to say no overwrite that if he wanted to use the story for the book, so that's what I did. So it's either Canada or North America he was in, Brad Steiger.
Yeah, apparently Worlds Before Our Own, Mysteries of Time and Space.
Could be, yeah.
Revelation.
Oh, I definitely believe, well, I mean, there's a lot more going on than we know, and a lot of sightings and all that. Like, now I told friends of mine that just laughed and said, no, you're mad. but I know what I've seen. So now the other friend that was with me, now we've seen it together anyway.
Is that the reason, Noel, why people who see these things, which, as Kevin Nolan pointed out, the physicist, that there could be rational explanations for these, but a lot of people won't go public about them because they think they're going to be laughed at. Now, yeah, hopefully...
No, but the first UFO I seen, I mean, what woke me up was the bright light, like that other man was saying there, and woke me up, and I just pulled across. It was so bright, the light, and I just looked out the window, and now, even though it was big, I was saying, how is that feet over the garden? Because our garden would be small enough. But actually, it wasn't over our garden. It was actually just between all the houses and up over the house garden. So I was so convinced that, I've seen it, that I was saying, surely someone else must have seen it, but no one else.
But it is interesting that you weren't frightened, Noel. You were amazed. No. The word you used were amazed. Brian Hyde, were you frightened when you were on duty in the Navy?
No, because it was but like that man there said, Joe... This, like you were saying, the physicist said that it could be another explanation. There is no explanation for the speed that this thing left the sky at. It just
Let's put that to Kevin. Kevin, the speed, which is referred to in Ratcliffe's hints about what's going to be in this report from the US Department of Defense in July. They say unexplained speed, i.e. Incredible sound of light, barrier breaking. Kevin, how do you explain people noticing enormous speeds?
Well, you know, I obviously can't explain what I didn't see, and that's not... I'm not stepping back from it that way. What I'm trying to say is, you know, first of all, we've got to take these accounts as being genuine, that people definitely did witness something. But there's two other elements that have come to it. Number one, just because we don't have a simple explanation doesn't mean it's an alien UFO. That's the first thing. And we have to ask, what's the likelihood of plausibilities here? And an alien UFO is probably the least likely of what it is. Because from a science standpoint, it's ridiculously hard to travel to other planets. And aliens to travel trillions of kilometers and use their millions of years or thousands of years of technology just to play some sort of curious game at Earth doesn't even make plausible sense from any rational standpoint. But now, the other thing I'll then say as well is that apart from just saying you can't explain, like, there are natural phenomena we don't know.
Okay.
And there are unusual atmospheric effects that cause very coherent light phenomenon and very fast supersonic movements. So all I'm trying to say is that nobody should ever doubt the integrity or of an account. But I suppose I just put it to everybody to say, just because we can't explain it, doesn't mean we go and say it's a UFO from another planet. Because I honestly feel that on the unlikely occasion that aliens came and visited here, that it would be a global phenomenon that we would know about instantaneously and would change history. Now, you know, as Carl Sagan says, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. And we don't have that smoking gun evidence yet. And I think, you know, people are seeing some phenomenon that are unusual, whether man-made or human-made or natural. But to say that they're UFOs, I think, is, as I say, an extraordinarily big leap to take in itself.
And then, Kevin, what do you think of people who want to go to Mars and not come back?
Yeah, I mean, I don't get that.
Well, they can't. They won't be able to come back.
Yeah, I've been interested in astronomy all my life, and I don't want to do it. But we have two Irish people, Dr.
Norris
and Dr. Niamh Shaw, want to go into space. It's a passion, and they want to do it for very good reasons. Some people just want to go explore, and I think that's down to personality.
But we have, I'm trying to remember his name. But don't we have one Irish man who's booked on a trip to Mars? Even though it's suicide, isn't it? You don't come back. Sorry.
That's right, yeah. Well, as I said, I think some people are just kind of like, there are multiple reasons why people want to go into space and even go to Mars. I think the saddest one is people kind of think, I'm tired of Earth, let's go to Mars.
I think this man wanted to explore. He wanted to, and he realized death by suicide is a complete wrong description of it. He wants to go to Mars with the trip being planned to see what's there, but he knows once they get there, the possibility of them getting back to Earth. So as far as Earth is concerned, and his family, obviously, his friends, he's gone.
Yeah, and that was called the Mars One project. That is losing a little bit of interest, and I think the person you're mentioning has stepped away from that. But however, what I will say is many of people even subscribe and go and say, if they went with Elon Musk or with NASA, recognise that it's an unprecedented challenge. I mean, but look at the people who went to South Africa. Tim Crean, you know, they didn't know they were going to come back. So, I mean, the thing is that I suppose we can't, there's an exploration spirit and some people aren't there. And, you know, you cannot knock that desire. If it's the opportunity to go to Mars, I mean, I think many people would love that opportunity. And the reason why we're not talking about coming back is it's so technically hard to do. So they're being kind of offered a one-way ticket, and some people are saying, "Yep, I'll sign up."
Yeah, well, apparently there's a space exploration company called Mars One, which you've just referred to. They shortlisted 705 people to travel to Mars. There's a man called Joseph Roach, who apparently, now you think this might be outdated, is the only Irishman on the list. But if he goes, he knows he can never come back.
He has actually stepped back from
Has he? Okay. He's a doctor.
He's a professor of astronomy in Trinity. And he stepped back six or seven years ago. I think he stepped away from it.
Okay. Yeah. Now, Paddy, do you want to ask Kevin any questions? Kevin is a lecturer in physics.
Yes. How will Kevin explain a 60-foot circular object glowing blood red, 100 foot over a low hill that remains stationary for at least up to 3 minutes, and then glide it as if on a cushion of air about less than a quarter of a mile across trees and disappeared. And when I say disappeared, I think it landed.
Yeah, as I said, I obviously can't explain that, but all I'm trying to say
is, excuse me, Kevin, is there physics outside our comprehension that we're only beginning to understand now? And I'm not talking about coming from other parts of the universe or the cosmos. Is there a possibility that these things are coming from other dimensions in space-time?
Well, there is, and in fact, even CERN are announcing a possible fifth force. We definitely don't claim we know all of physics. I suppose my simple point to these things is, first of all, I genuinely, as a scientist, never knock these accounts. I think they are made with good faith, and there are plenty of phenomena. But all I'm trying to say is, to say that it might be a UFO...
You can't understand them. Your science can't understand it, and that's understandable. But what happened to me afterwards then, that I am certain had a connection to what I had saw that evening. That is, to me, uncanny, and it's beyond science fiction.
Okay, well, Kevin, do you want to come in there, Kevin? Sorry.
Yeah, well, as I said, all such accounts are made on good faith. I think that the point, I'm just going to return to the same point to say that I obviously can't explain each phenomenon, but I think what I'm trying to say is that let me play hardball and say not one single UFO account can produce evidence to a global audience.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to say is that's the problem.
Maybe that's what these people are relying. It doesn't blow their cover for whatever reason that they're here. If they are here for some reason, and I think they are here for some reason, and that's what they're relying, that is so crazy that it's unbelievable.
And why, Kevin? Sorry, do you want to come back in there?
Yeah, well, I was just, as I say, if I'm going to put my hardball hat on, I'll say, yeah. I mean, we have to question what's more plausible, the accuracy of the account or that there are aliens here who don't want to be visibly seen. And I think most people
will
just say...
They are here. Yeah. I guarantee you they are here. They are here.
But what is their... What is their intent?
I don't know, but I believe it's surveillance. And another thing is their concept of time and maybe even space is similar to ours and is incomprehensible to us?
Well, we're into the area of conjecture now, and all I'm trying to tell you is that from our understanding of science, which is very good, it is immensely hard. We don't even think we can ever get something the size of a spaceship that you see in science fiction movies ever to other stars, like ever. Like the amount of energy needed to move a spaceship from here to Proxima Centauri would need more energy than the sun
produces.
Well,
that's us, Kevin. Well, that's us. We are talking about our physical world and what we can accomplish. Who are we to say that there are other entities out there that are way beyond our comprehension?
Yeah, but Paddy, that's, as Kevin said, that's conjecture. Who's to say?
Of course it's conjecture. But why have so many people like myself? In different parts of the world. Why have we? Surely we're not all hallucinating.
No, nobody's saying hallucinating.
We're seeing something similar.
But let me put it this way: for all of the, there have been 100 million accounts of UFOs since 1940s. 100 million. Now, first of all, I'll say to you, they can't all be true because there haven't been 100 million UFOs here. The second thing I'll say is that not one single one has produced evidence that can be shown to a mass audience, for example, on the
Sixth Wonder. Of course.
No, but that's what we need. So what I'm trying to say is that's why the reliability of the evidence has to be questioned about UFOs. I'm not saying that the phenomenon
didn't
occur.
Coming from US military pilots and from radar on warships and aircraft carriers that cannot be explained. Objects appearing and disappearing without explanation off radar.
Well, as I said, from going from non-explained to aliens is a big leap of faith.
What pilots are reported to be seen with the naked eye, with their own eyes.
Okay, but Kevin, you had a phrase there. I just want to come back to it if you can recapture it for me. Your phrase was that the concept of the accuracy of the sightings, or otherwise, is much easier to believe than the possibility of sightings. Is that it?
I'm not sure what.
But you were convincing me because what you were saying was the impossibility. And I know actuarially nothing is impossible, but the impossibility of aliens coming from a foreign planet or UFOs is so much greater than the possibility of people accidentally, with good intent, and you say that, like Paddy, would accidentally misidentifying stuff.
Yeah, as I said, it's not that it's ever impossible, and nobody's saying it's impossible, but it is extraordinarily hard to move across the stars. It is much more likely that what we're seeing are local phenomena that we can't explain. And nobody's saying we have an explanation. I'm just saying that on the balance of possibilities, the notion of any alien civilization, even as Paddy started saying, we don't know all the science. What we do know is this much. We know that if an alien's going to move a spacecraft from one star to another, it's going to take about the same energy that the sun puts out. It doesn't matter what the physics is.
Okay.
It's ridiculously hard.
Okay.
And we have to question that.
Okay, stay with us, Kevin. Kathleen Kelleher and then Elaine. Kathleen.
Yes, hello.
Your point, please.
Well, I'm just ringing to tell you about a book that I read some years ago about the Roswell incident in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Roswell incident took place, I think, in New Mexico just after World War II, around 1947.
Yeah.
And apparently there had been some sort of a crash, and space-like material and items were found in this crash. I think there was a man called Mr. Brazil who was part of all of this. And the U.S. Army was involved because it happened on some of their land. And the official story that eventually went out was that the debris that had fallen from the sky to the ground was really part of a weather balloon that had been sent up to gauge the speed and the height of winds and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But the material was taken from the site. And years ago, I read a paperback book that I had borrowed from Greystone's library when it was in temporary quarters. And it was written by someone who had interviewed the people who were involved at the time. And the one that made the most impression on me was the U.S. captain at the time, who was the one that had to put out the story about the weather balloons. And his son was interviewed by the man who wrote this book. And the son remembers his father bringing home some of the material from the crash site. Mm. And some of the material was a very thin metal that to us would look like aluminium. But it was a very flexible aluminium. And if you crushed it up into your hand and squeezed it and then opened your hand up again, the aluminium would open up again into a flat sheet. Now, this was a young boy now who saw this stuff from his father. And eventually, I think they kept this material at home, and eventually they were making a patio out the back, and they kind of put it in the cement out back.
Again, but for Roswell, was it 1947, Cold War, after the Second World War?
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing, Joe. Initially, that's what everybody thought, that it was the Russians, and it was some sort of something to do with the Russians and the Cold War. And all throughout the Southwest, in the United States. I mean, this got huge press coverage.
And it still does. There's a whole industry around Roswell,
isn't
it?
That's right. But the main thing, though, Joe, is that this evidence was taken by the United States government, and it's in storage. And it's never, the story of what happened has never been revealed. And then after I read the book, I brought it back to the library. And, of course, by then they were back in their own premises. And I went to borrow the book a second time, and they couldn't find it. And I've tried to get this book on Amazon.
So the library disappeared.
But these are first. What I'm trying to say to you is that these are first person interviews.
Yeah,
but everyone
looks up Roswell, and every time you look up Roswell, you'll always find counter arguments and counter.
Oh yes, I agree.
And there's TV series made out of it.
Yes, that's right. But the U.S. government has never told the full story.
Okay, Kathleen, do you believe there are aliens?
No. Okay. I believe that maybe out in space. Oh, no, not at all. A neighbor of mine and I, very late one night, we saw something in the sky that looked a bit unusual, but we just dismissed it. I mean, we never spoke about it afterwards.
Okay.
No, I don't think, and I'm not a UFO person, because this book was so unique in the sense that it had firsthand testimony of the people who were involved at the time. And that's what's so important. All this other story that you're talking about now is secondhand evidence. It's third-hand evidence.
Well, Paddy saw stuff, but Kevin, in fairness, Kevin Nolan, who's the lecturer in physics and Technological University in Dublin, is as best he can, as he said, and respectively as well, he's trying to address the various sightings. Okay, Kathleen Keller, thanks indeed. More after this break. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Elaine, we're talking. Paddy Gary contacted us about UFOs in light of an upcoming American government report, which is going to indicate that there are a lot more sightings, he says. And indeed, John Ratcliffe, who was the American former director of intelligence, is saying this, that there are a lot more than previously revealed. Elaine, what did you see?
Well, this sounds absolutely bananas. I am a skeptic. I'm not a drunk or a drug addict.
No, no one is.
But at 4:10 in the morning, and I live in rural County Cavan, I went to my bathroom, and I have a very low slung window because it's a sort of an extended cottage, and the upper part of it is very clear, and what looked like in a very clear sky, very low, over, just over the trees from where I live, probably, you know, taking into account the possibility of optical illusions, etc., about a mile away, I saw just above the tree height, which is quite low, a silver tube which turned into a spinning sphere, both silver, and went poof and vanished. And I was completely freaked out. I live on my own. I have seen things in the sky before because I'm, you know, I watch the skies at night in the summertime, particularly with beautiful skies in rural County Cavan. But this was like nothing I've seen before. And it was very scary because it was so low. It was so close to my home. And I was completely shocked. And it was just so quickly because I literally just looked out the window, saw it. It was gone. The spinning sphere vanished within 10 seconds. It was absolutely bizarre. And I understand people can mock someone for saying they've seen this, but I did see it. And when I reported it to somebody a few days later, they said, well, I've just read about the packed airplane in Heathrow where the two pilots nearly crashed into a UFO. And that was in December as well. So I, you know, I understand people think you're mad when you say you've seen these things, but it was like nothing I've seen. This it didn't even conform to your usual UFO descriptions because, like anyone, when I see or hear about these things, I'll read them. But I hadn't seen anything specifically like this before, and
so
it was
this was
quite
December 12th, 3 months ago.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And add anything previous, Elaine?
Well, I did, and this is even more that crazy because this was years ago when I was walking home from the cinema in my hometown, which is not a million miles from where I am presently. It's 20 miles away, and it was August 1987, much younger, wasn't old enough to have a driving license, and I came home from the cinema at about 10:30 at night and was walking up the main street. At the time, it was a very, very, very quiet town, unlike now. And there was something in the sky which actually did look like your classic description of a UFO, flying saucer.
And were were you frightened?
No, I was fascinated. And I actually thought, wow, I wonder, will they, you know, do a CE3K and give me a lift to somewhere interesting like Richard Dreyfuss? But it actually was sitting bizarrely between the cathedral and a house belonging to people that I know. And I actually did think I'm, you know, seeing things. And it was a beautiful summer night. I went back to my home where I lived with my parents. And I watched it in from my parents' front garden for an hour and a half. And my mother came out and saw it and wasn't particularly interested. Every so often, what was amazing was that lights would come on. There were red lights and they went around spinning. And then they would flash three times. Then there were green lights. They went around spinning in a circle. They flashed three times. And there were blue lights. And they went around spinning and flashed three times. And then it bunny hopped across the sky. Now, my father came home. He was at the golf club at the 19th hole, 11:30. And he came out and we tried to take photographs. And it didn't really look, it was very dark at that point. It was coming up to midnight. I rang the Dunsink Observatory.
Okay.
Because I thought, you know, this is nuts. This is literally nuts.
Okay.
And I rang them up and I said, I'm looking at this, I'm describing it, I'm standing at the front door of my parents' house. And what they said to me was, what you're observing is scintillation. And scintillation, Joe, is when stars graze the horizon. This was not scintillation. This was a silver object with red and green and blue flashing lights.
Okay.
My father then came out because I said, it's moving. It's starting to move. Mm-hmm. You are the only person in this house who can drive. We've got to follow it.
Okay.
And we actually got into the car and drove as it, we went, it was in Cavan Town. We drove 12 miles towards Coote Hill.
Okay.
We followed this object. It was moving at high speed. But when we were within about 3 miles of Coote Hill Town, it did a sharp turn to the left and went up, which would have been towards the Northern Irish border, which in 1987 you would not go to at half past midnight, frankly. Now, the next day, there was actually a poster at the local Church of Ireland saying, has anyone seen this object? And then somebody else, a friend of my parents, their brother and father had also seen it down in Belturbet. And in the Irish Times the following day, there was an article which I think may have been planted, as some things are done by agencies, governmental or whatever, saying that there was a military vehicle being tested in this country and was doing regular runs from the Kerry coast up to Donegal. And it was later confirmed that there was, in fact, an extraordinary American vehicle which was able to circumnavigate the entire globe.
An actual military aircraft.
And they were testing it on the West Coast. But frankly, I don't understand why a military vehicle would have sat over Cavan Town on a summer's night in August 1987 and flashed red, green and blue lights and bunny hopped across the sky and then gone up to Coot Hill and turned left for the border with Northern Ireland. It just doesn't... It was so bizarre.
I don't know how to react to that, Elaine.
Well,
maybe you
know,
can help
me. We were all, you know, sane. We were driving the car.
Okay,
we followed
obviously.
It.
Okay. Listen to Pat in Edenderry, back down to the Midlands. You say you saw a flying saucer. Where, Pat?
Hi, Joe. Yeah. It's not Edenderry. It's Meath.
Okay, sorry.
I was coming in. It was Christmas night about 4 or 5 years ago, driving my mother back in to Navan. And we just came around a sharp corner. And the two of us together said, Jesus, what was that? You know, like, it was just something big, orange ball flashed across the top of the car. And, both of us got such a shock. So I came home and I rang my son-in-law and I said, Jamie, telling him what happened. And he said, where do you think it went? I said, it looked to me like it went down into the field. But he went out the next morning and scoured the fields. He said, I can't see anything. But just to get... Paddy was ringing there from
Paddy is still there. Well, Paddy doesn't want to give away too much information, but you're saying you were going
from Rathkenny area, out that area,
into Navan.
And we got such a shock.
Paddy, does that area mean anything to you, Paddy?
Not at all, Joe.
No, okay.
And this was 1959.
I know.
I'll say no more. A light aircraft skimming across the tops of trees at tree level, knocking branches and leaves down on top of my head. That wasn't my imagination.
No.
Or the character that sat at the controls of that aircraft looking down at me with ebony brown skin, twin of the characters... the two characters that I saw in that limo.
The Man in Black.
He was a twin.
But he had everything you describe about him is humanoid. You say.
But I knew instinctively, my sixth sense told me that he wasn't human. I was looking at the face of an alien. And that aircraft, 3 years ago, a light aircraft without a cockpit, with a character sitting in it, with an outfit from, say, a flying outfit from maybe back the 40s or 50s, a leather jacket, a leather helmet and goggles, with North African, Egyptian-type brown skin, and I tell you, Joe, the expression on that face wasn't human. It was cruel. I tell you something, it would frighten the life out of anybody.
Okay, say with us.
Has Paddy learned that somebody was trying to chase him off?
Well, that's a good question, too.
Paddy, do you believe in evolution? Do you think this didn't all happen before, that there's people, you know... thousands or millions of years ago that are doing what we done and they went off.
Okay. Well, maybe that raises another issue, Kevin.
Yeah.
I need to take a break, Kevin. But Kevin, do physicists, with your understanding of the world, do you believe in God? I know you can't speak in the generality.
Given
that we have miracles and apparitions and water into wine and...
Yeah.
I mean, look, the belief in a deity is really outside of science in a sense. I often say, I teach science communication, I say to my students, we're trying to explain nature. There's no, show me the funded project to disprove the existence of God. There isn't one. But what I will say is, and this is the bit where there's friction between the likes of religion and science, is that science actually can explain the origin of the universe right back to a fraction of a second after it began without the need for a deity. And that's the bit that really, I suppose, worries people or creates fear. Mm. Now, whether there's something outside the experience of that that we call God, you know, I'm no expert in that. As people used to say, Einstein believed in God. Well, he was an expert in physics, not in religion. So the thing is that, as I said, we shouldn't in any way as science try to create conflict in those sorts of areas.
Okay, stay with us. I'll ask you about Roswell after this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
You're definitely going to have to come back. So Mary Murphy it was in Ballyfermot, 1974. What did you see?
I was, my boyfriend lived on Rossmore Road.
Yeah.
There's a big green. Yeah. And across from that there was, I'm not sure at the time, it was Ankle or PC Pal.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, yeah,
Robert,
yeah.
You know, there.
The California Hills, they call it, yeah.
Yes, that's exactly it, yeah. And high up over that, and, you know, over that building, we saw a big light, kind of a disc-shaped light.
Okay.
And from it, there were smaller lights coming and going.
Okay, and you believed it was?
Absolutely.
Okay. Kevin Nolan, so just before I let you go, Kevin, do you recommend any reading that would help people on the other side of the... I know you say there isn't two sides, but...
I'll tell you, there's a fantastic book by Carl Sagan called The Demon-Haunted World. Okay. Have a read of that. It will really... In fact, I read that book and realised how superstitious I was, even as a scientist. And this is where he kind of comes to the position that we have to take all of these accounts, they're worth having... And we definitely need them. Nobody in science or the knocking is saying we have all the answers. And I'll just leave you with the thought that, you know, to take a leap from an unexplained object, there being aliens or maybe a conspiracy theory behind it, in my view, is unlikely. I think there are natural explanations.
Okay, Carl Sagan, we put all that information up. And apparently there's an incredible TV documentary made by Colm Stapleton. We'll talk about that tomorrow as well, looking at the number of calls here. Shannon Gorman, producer, Ray Darcy next.